Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Gee, Bob, where the hell were you last night? While the Repiglicans were out debating, Tim Pawlenty and Michelle Bachman were clawing at each other like a couple of cats in heat, and Mitt Romney, Willard Romney, was talking about dog food. Bob, you missed all the fun, dadgummit. Yeah, I did. Now, I'm gonna tell you the story of my last... 36 hours or so. And I want you to understand that I'm not telling you this tale. It's not a tale, it's every damn bit of it true. As some means of eliciting sympathy or whining or anything else. But merely as an exemplar of what is not present in our media today, and perhaps we will examine why it isn't. Yes. Yeah, let me just get this out of the way. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Because sooner or later it's gonna tie together. Everything that happens with this program happens because you choose to make it happen. Because, well, you know, I'm not independently wealthy. Neither are you. And none of us has the wherewithal to create something like this by ourselves. We do, however, have the wherewithal to create it standing together. So... the story of the last 36 hours or so, maybe the last 30 hours, it all started yesterday at about 10:30, and it started admittedly prosaically, to say the very least. Yeah, prosaically, that's the right word. I had made, because it was badly needed, you know, when the family goes out and around, we go in the rusty red pickup truck. And the truck had been rather badly out of alignment for a while. So 2-3 days ago, I made an appointment. Yeah, you got to make an appointment to get a rusty red pickup truck aligned. Oh, well. And they said, well, bring her over about 11 o'clock on Thursday. We'll get her done. And so, the night before, Agnes looks at me and says, you know, this is the last weekend before school starts. So as soon as we're done with the alignment, I want you to take me and take the girls and me over to Ripley so we can see the grandbabies, because it may be a while before we can make this trip again. My answer? Yes, dear. Shoot, I'd take her over there every week if I could. I miss them, too. So the alignment, we got done with the alignment about 1 o'clock. And I looked back at the rear end of the truck. And it's been disturbing to me for some amount period of time now. that the tires on the back of the truck looked like racing slicks. Really. No tread left. Because that's my world. That's our world. And thus I said, all right, put two new tires on. So, because, you know, you line up the front end, if you're car people, you get it. So there we were, truck sitting on four good tires. And we left out of Oak Hill, West Virginia, to drive to Ripley, which is about 100 miles away. 90, maybe. And we go merrily down the road. We get to Ripley. I drop Agnes and the girls off. And Ferg and I, well, we get back out on the interstate to make our journey back so that we can hopefully get a show in. Well, this is West Virginia. And yes, we're going to talk about the news here in a little bit, but just to give it, there's a purpose. This is West Virginia. This is not Central Illinois. This is not Kansas. There's a reason they call this the Mountain State. Because there's not just a whole lot of level ground, except for the level ground that the mountaintop removal industry is making by blowing away and toxifying everything that they get their hands on. Okay? So as we're driving back, I noticed that on the upslopes, the rusty red pickup truck is losing power. No matter how hard I press the gas, nothing happens. I mean, we're still going and everything. The engine's running, but the engine labors, but there's just not a lot. There's no power being transferred to the drive axle. This, to say the least, is not a good thing. At one point, you know how it is with an automatic transmission. You punch it, and you go into passing gear. Well, when I punched it, it made the sound. It sounded like a bag full of aluminum cans being shaken. So I stopped doing that and gently nursed the car back to Charleston. You know, it's late on a Thursday. You're going to need to make an appointment. So I did the next best thing. I stopped in at a 30-minute oil change joint. I said, check all the fluids, see if anything looks particularly hateful anywhere. And they did. And Ferg and I came on up the road until we got to the foot of the mountain on the top of which we live. And we came up that mountain at a screaming 15 miles an hour. Not 16, not 17, certainly not 20. 15 miles an hour. Because that's all she had in her. And she gave us everything she had. She's a wonderful truck. And we got here, and I said, well, not much we can do now. It was well past showtime. And so Ferg and I did a little puttering around the house and, you know, just trying to straighten some stuff up and so forth. We took a little quality father-son time and played guitar together. He played. I followed. He's so far out in front of me. I think I'm on straight road. But the plan was to get up this morning and run downtown to the local mechanic, a man I think very well of, and see if we could figure out what the hell was wrong with the rusty red pickup truck. And barring that, try to get my father's old vehicle back on the road. That was plan B. Well, we limped back downtown to find a piece of paper taped to the mechanic's door. Gone, Thursday, Friday, back Monday, and then one word, vacation. Hallelujah. You know, the man deserves more than a two-day vacation, but this is America. Plan B. Well, there's a... I noticed a leak. The vehicle didn't have any fuel in it. So while we were down there, I filled up the gas can, brought it back up, and poured 5 gallons of gas in it. 5 gallons of gas came back out the bottom. So I didn't really crawl around or anything, but I called a buddy who knew a guy who called a guy, and a mechanic buddy who was just happened to be home and came up and had a look. And he said, "Buddy, you ain't got no problem with your fuel line. You got a hole in your gas tank." I said, "A hole in my gas tank?" "Yeah." I said, "This thing hadn't even been driven in ages. In fact, the last time it was driven was to go down and have repairs done on it to get a fuel pump put in it. And it did not have a leaky gas tank at that time." I mean, anytime you got a car sitting around, you got to go out and start it every now and then, or it just goes completely to hell. And so we did that. Go out, start it, let it run, turn it off, you know, do it again a week later. You know, this is a 1998 vehicle. The rusty red pickup truck is a 1995. We only have one on the road because only one of them has, you know, tags. But he said, "Yeah, you got a hole in your fuel tank." He says, "It's right in the right spot to make sure that every last drop of that drains out." And he said, "The damnedest thing is, it's almost like it was done with a drill bit or a 10-penny nail." And so I crawled under there and felt around, and sure enough, you know, if you've drilled something and you've pulled the bit back out, you know how a little bit of the material that you were drilling in comes back out, and it's got a little lip surface around it? Right. So what it boils, he says, "I guess that could happen out driving it around, but you ain't been driving it around." I said, "No, I have not been driving it around. Been sitting right there the whole time." He said, "Well, fuel tanks don't get holes in them like that just sitting there." So the upshot is, the word some might use would be vandalism. Another appropriate word is sabotage. I don't hide who I am and what I believe in. But a little bit ago, one of the people I consulted about these potential problems was my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee. And I told him about it. And David wrote back a few minutes ago, and he said, I said, "Nice small hole, about like the diameter of a 10-penny nail's been punched in the tank. Curious, huh?" David in Tennessee wrote back and said, "Curious? No, not at all. I'm surprised they didn't toss a lit road flare under it 15 minutes later. But maybe they were just after the gas and didn't have 5 feet of garden hose." As David in Tennessee is fond of saying, "This ain't funny, McGee." Mainly because it ain't. So, here I sit. It's 15 past the hour on Friday evening. My lovely wife and two darling daughters are 90 to 100 miles away, depending on how you go. And I got to get them back here Sunday night. And then on Tuesday, I've got to get Margie to the hospital so she can have her toxic gallbladder removed. That's my world right now. And Doodle has freshman orientation at the high school on Monday as well. And by the way, just to answer a question, no, that, you know, this is a fairly modern gas tank. It is, in fact, plastic. Again, I don't offer this as some sort of a plea for sympathy. It is not that. Rather, I tell you all of this by way of explaining, A, the fact that I may be just a teensy, tiny bit scatterbrained this evening, because my head is in about 600,000 different places at one time. And because this is not just my reality. This is the kind of reality that affects millions of Americans who don't have, for instance, an elected representative in Congress, because that elected representative in Congress has been superseded by an elected representative for, oh, I don't know, the Koch brothers. This is reality for a lot of us. There are a lot of us out there who make, and most members of the Horn family are like this. You make choices between tires and food. Between food and medicine. And between life and death. And you do it bravely every day of your lives. No whining, no pissing and moaning, no complaining. At the same time that if you were, for instance, listening to Malloy last night, you heard him telling the story of Carol Costello, the anchor at CNN, who cited a Heritage Foundation report to prove that the budget mess in America is the fault of poor people. If you were listening to this program, oh, three nights ago, you heard the Republican Senate candidate from the state of Nebraska saying that welfare patients are like raccoons, that they'll always take the easy way out. You filthy bastard, you have no idea how hard it is from day to day. About the only thing that bolstered me along the way was listening, I called Agnes to just sort of keep her apprised of all of this along the way, and she said, honey, I love you, and it'll be okay. Because after all these years, I know you always find a way. A fella could go through life without a whole lot of things and be okay as long as he's got that. And that was pretty much saving. And that's the reality of me and you and millions like us. But there is a vast right-wing conspiracy that doesn't give a damn about any of that. It was on display last night on Fox when the morons got together for their little presidential pageant clavern. I didn't watch it. I waited for clips. Because I knew that in the state I was in, well, what's that old Kenny Rogers song? I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in. Yeah, that. But every now and then, we get a little finger poked in our eye. A little reminder that we are by God who we are, and that we by God had best keep remembering who we are, and who by God our effing betters are.
Move on to Wisconsin. The Wisconsin recall, by turning back the Democrats' attempt to recall, and I tell you, those were heroic Republican state senators that voted against all the union activity in Wisconsin, you know, ending the collective bargaining and making them pay a little bit toward their own retirement and so forth. That was big stuff when it happened. It was gutsy and it was courageous, not only the Republican governor, but these Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature. And by turning back the Democrat attempt to recall, there were six Republican senators that they were trying to recall. Four of them were victorious. Four Republicans won, so that they maintained control of the Senate, Wisconsin. This means that the people of Wisconsin have fended off what amounted to a government union takeover. The unions were trying, via the recall election, to take over the state of Wisconsin. The people of Wisconsin rejected it. The Democrats in the unions and their allies in the media, which is to say the media, tried everything. They pulled out all the stops. What was it, $35 million? They had all their goons running around, and they still lost. All of which should be very inspiring to the rest of us. I mean, if the taxpayers of Wisconsin can win...
Now, I was just going to let this roll through, but the rest of us? Who the hell are the rest of us, Rush? You jiggling old junkie? The rest of us? You mean the 0.1% of America in whose demographic cesspit you cavort? Because, Flush, the rest of us like things like living wages and pensions and health care. The rest of us! You've seen Groundhog Day, right? You know, toward the end of the movie where Bill Murray goes over, and it's actually his brother playing the role, Brian Doyle Murray, the same guy that played the head of the Caddyshack in Caddyshack. And it suddenly turns out that Brian Doyle Murray, who is the head of the Groundhog Day committee or whatever, begins choking at the table. And Bill Murray walks over and calmly lifts him out of his seat, performs the Heimlich maneuver, and says, "Hey, buddy, try to chew a little more next time." Because the Brian Doyle Murray character was turning purple and stuff, and he was dying. There's another scene like that in The Fifth Element, where Mr. Evil, or whatever, who has an army of little robots and creature toys, begins choking on a cherry pit and has to be saved by the good guy priest, played by Ian Holm. In both instances, the characters doing the good thing that naturally comes to them. The rest of us, Rush! Jesus! Someday, I hope one of those goddamn lark's vomit canapes gets hung halfway down! And everybody just sits around and waits for your wealth to save your ponderous, pendulous, blubberous, gesticulating ass, the rest of us. That's really mean of me to say, and it runs contrary to my basic kumbaya nature. But come on, even the best among us, who here wouldn't just, you know, double-checking to make sure nobody was looking upon news that Rush Limbaugh had finally gone to his long home, who wouldn't just kick their heels up just a little bit? The rest of us. The rest of us.
Against all those odds. You know, Wisconsin...
Against what odds? You filthy addict. Against Citizens United odds? Against the vast, incalculable, uncapable resources of the Koch brothers? This is what drives me crazy about this old fart. He can't even maintain his own positions without lying. Against whom were the odds stacked in Wisconsin? Who stood to benefit from optical scan machines that could not be hand counted? Who stood to benefit from a circuit or from a county clerk in Waukesha County who has a habit of just finding extra votes lying around? Who? Who, damn it, who? Against the odds. Tell it to the Marines.
Recently, a red state. And that's why this was important. Only recently would its new status as a red state hold. And it did. If the taxpayers of Wisconsin can win against all those odds, we should be able to do the same thing in every state. And in Washington, D.C. We ought to be able to roll back Obamacare. In fact, we ought to be able to roll back everything Obama has given us over the last 2.5 years. We should be able to roll back the whole Democrat agenda for the last 65 years. Yes, we can.
Had enough. Had enough. Now, as Tim from L.A. just noted in an email to me, here's this jiggling gas bag. And he really did jiggle. Remember when he was mocking Michael J. Fox? I mean, I don't just say things. Here's this jiggling gas bag bitching about unions. Lucky for me, I've got people like Tim from L.A., and James, Ron in Raleigh, David in Tennessee, Reverbo, Albert, Mark, Mora, Jude, who will from time to time provide me with the information that I desperately need in the moment I most desperately need it. For instance, this from Tim from L.A. What? Rush criticizing unions? And a link to the general election voting results from AFTRA, the Association of Film, Television, and Radio Artists. The Union. Let's see. This is I'm not sure. Well, not sure what year this is, but it's recent. But in that particular election, Morgan Fairchild won as an actor. If I'm reading this correctly, Morgan Fairchild won as an actor. Robert Pine, Audrey. These are people who will sit on committees. But, among other things, scanning the document, as Tim from LA notes, under the heading of announcer, Rush Limbaugh got a vote. Tim also notes, of course, that's because Rush Limbaugh, Rusty Limbaugh, is a member of the Association of Film, Television, and Radio Artists, and a voter, too. Tim querying, what the F is that drug addict bitching about? What the F indeed? He's a union member. And his union represents him well. His union, among other things, if with his millions of dollars he actually needed it, his union provides him with health care. His union provides him with a pension. His union probably provides him with disability insurance. And his union is the one that makes sure that there is a minimum standard wage which he would earn as a nationally syndicated radio host. If Premier Radio Network disappeared tomorrow and the golden EIB microphone turned to the brass that it's actually made out of, but he still stayed on enough stations to be a nationally syndicated host, and all the ads for bowling balls that pick up, or vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls and drop them on Swedish mattresses that are being lain on by men who are waiting for their herbal hair growth tonic to work while waiting for the stiffy that the natural stiffy medicine was going to give them. If all that advertising for the rubes out there, oh, while listening to a Bose Wave radio in a building from General Steel, with floors from Lumber Liquidators. If all of that advertising went away, but he was still a nationally syndicated radio host, Rush Limbaugh's membership in AFTRA would guarantee him something between $90,000 and $100,000 a year, so that hopefully he could keep living. But it's okay for Rush Limbaugh to have a union. But if you're a guy who rigs lights in Wisconsin, or if you're a firefighter, or a police officer, or a clerk typist 3, or a truck driver, no, by God, you don't get a union, you effing prol. You get what the Republican Party and the Koch brothers decide you need. And you will take it, and you will thank them for it, prol! And we'll also thank them when, as he noted, they go ahead and they roll back all of what did he say? We should be able to roll back the whole Democrat agenda over the last 65 years. Yes, we can. You will thank them when they have rolled back Social Security. You will thank them when they have eliminated Medicare. You will thank them when they have eliminated Medicaid. You will thank them when the unemployment compensation, not just for people, when it goes away for everybody, you will thank the Republican Party because, by God, they're patriots. And then if the transmission falls out, then if you're running on Maypop tires and one of them blows at 70 miles an hour, you will thank them for not taking care of you. foreseeing to it that you end your days in abject misery, or lose your job, or your home. You'll thank them, because that's the meaning of America. Email coming in from Ron and Raleigh. That's why I told this story, because I knew I'd get responses like this. Ron and Raleigh, good tires, you say? I've been riding on May Pops on my front-wheel drive VW so long that I'm beginning to enjoy the sensation of hydroplaning. I know just how you feel. And you know what? The fact of the matter is, if I had not been driving Agnes and the girls and had Ferg with me, I wouldn't have done it. I would have gotten it lined up and gone on driving on slicks on the rear end. But I was going to be on the road for a couple of hundred miles with the human beings most precious to me on this planet with me. And prudence told me that I would have been sorely negligent and courting disaster, not for me, but for them, had I not done what I did. But it was no small outlay, and then to find out that, transmissions don't come cheap. It's probably what's wrong with the rusty red pickup truck is probably the transfer case. We've diagnosed and fiddled and screwed around until we've pretty much got it narrowed. There was some thought that maybe it was an exhaust manifold, an exhaust valve. Doesn't seem like. Running smooth as can be. Just no power getting from the engine to, right, and it goes through its gears like it's being beat to death. See, that's the frugality of our side. The rusty red pickup truck has 137,000 miles on it. It's a 1995, I've told you before. And this is not me climbing up on the cross. I'm not going to do it. I know better. We all need the wood, right? But the Republican Party wants to tell us about taking personal responsibility. And how we got to have us some austerity. And we got to tighten our belts. Well, if we tighten our belts anymore around here, my spine's going to the vertebrae is going to poke a hole in my belly button. That is, of course, figurative. I'm largish. David in Tennessee asking a pertinent question. I wonder if Flush flashed that AFTRA card to get in the hospital when he thought he might be experiencing the big one. Yeah, that hospital ER trip that caused Flush to say that the HCRA wasn't needed because his ER stay had gone so damned well. Don't you just love him? Asks David. Wonder if that AFTRA card helped him when he needed to get into that incredibly exclusive mental health facility in Arizona, where he went for 6 weeks and talked to the horses while they were getting him off his Jones, theoretically. You listen to him long enough, he's still rocking. William writing in. Man, you had me thinking as you told that truck story. I was good enough backyard mechanic once upon a time to be an honorary West Virginia citizen before my eyes went bad. As you talked, my memory was troubleshooting. Does that fuel pump that was changed ride in the tank? Can those plastic tanks holes be patched? Un-F Limbaugh, that fat junkie. I wonder how many bodyguards the bastard has basing the cost by the pound. He has his own regiment. Oh, yeah, we've been doing all kinds of shade tree mechanics, the problem the solving and saluting and sorting. And it's just beautiful. But it's worrisome. And I know I know what you go through, because we go through it too. And if I dare say, it makes what we do here at the Horn just a little bit different. Just a little bit different. Because reality is spoken here. You know, I had an email. One of the reasons I hated not being on the air last night was that there was a chance. There was a chance that Kate was going to call in. And we haven't heard from Kate since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. She's been kind of busy lately. But Wednesday night she wrote in and said, I missed the first 30 minutes of the show. I'll catch up later. Tomorrow, which was yesterday. Wow, it's like time travel. I'm taking a vet to Missoula for surgery. I'm going to be put up in a motel, and I'll have a landline in my computer. Yay! Try to call in for a catch-up, a real phone call early in the program if I'm not wore out and tired. I wrote back, told her I figured she'd been keeping the roads hot. She said, yeah. 20,000 miles since April. Go figure that. 20,000 miles since April. She said, phew, that's a lot of hot. And the 20,000 miles Kate has hung on her vehicle since April is in transporting veterans to and from VA hospital facilities. That's the kind of thing, if you go in for that sort of theology, where you can pretty much count on the fact that there's somebody up in the celestial spheres that's polishing a halo 24/7 just waiting. Oh, I hope this thing's shiny enough for you, ma'am. Because you're earning it. Kate's earning it. But these are our realities. And in a way, I'm beginning to feel like sort of a poster child for that reality. Leaking roof and patching and making do. Feels a lot like Cuba in a way. You know, those 55 Chevys that are still on the streets because the Cuban people are so innovative that they can keep them running even under the worst of adversity. Keep going. Just keep going. And we do. And you do. We move down the scale from chicken and pork chops to hamburger, and from hamburger to beans. And less. And keep going. And that's what makes you, us, we, heroes. Stupid bastards like that, that little freak in Nebraska, have no idea what it means to struggle and to really, really work. And that evil punk Paul Ryan in Wisconsin, who went to college on Social Security money and now wants to do away with it. Their whole filthy party's that way. Pillar to post. I mean, listen to, and you know, I'm a guy. And there are, you know, layers of privilege in our society. There's white privilege. There's male privilege. You know, and it accumulates. So I've got white male privilege going for me. Well, Rick Santorum, the frothy mixture, Bro-Fro-Mix, I believe Michael called him the other night. That's going to stick. Bro-Fro-Mix, brother frothy mixture. He's got that male white privilege going, too. Difference is, I recognize it, he's clueless. This is a guy that we spent time with on Wednesday talking about how paper towels weren't paper napkins and water wasn't beer. I don't know where that falls on the continuum between Kierkegaard and Nietzsche and Spinoza, and I just no. But I do know one thing. Bro Fro Mix, Rick the Frothy Mixture Santorum, is at war for reasons only he can answer. He is full on at war with women. With women. God help me, I love women. None of this would be worth a damn without Agnes. And frankly, by the time I got home last night, I might have just sat on the stoop and wept. If it wasn't for knowing what she thinks of me. And I'd pretty much kill anybody that tried to mess with her. There goes that kumbaya attitude again. That's twice tonight, Bob. But Rick Santorum is at war with women. Limbaugh's at war with everybody. Well, everybody who doesn't have, you know, $50 million a year, or at least a million. But Rick Santorum's at war with the women folk. What do I mean? That's what I mean.
All right, our next question. Thank you, Representative Bachman. Our next question is for Senator Santorum. In June, you said, quote, "I believe that any doctor who performs an abortion should be criminally charged for doing so. We would allow no exceptions for cases of rape and incest." Polls have long shown that large majorities of Americans
When he said you would allow no exceptions for rape or incest, Bro Fromix was real proud of himself. He nodded his little head up and down.
Support at least some exceptions for abortion. Are your views too much even for many conservatives to support?
You know, the Supreme Court of the United States, in a recent case, said that a man who committed rape could not be killed, would not be subject to the death penalty. Yet the child conceived as a result of that rape could be. That, to me, sounds like a country that doesn't have its morals correct.
Time out. No, the Supreme Court did not say that. The Supreme Court did not say that a man who had been charged with rape could not be executed, but the baby that was the result of rape could be. The Supreme Court, goddammit, did not say that. This sorry piece of excrescence, this turd on two legs, lies outright. You didn't hear that wrong, and neither did I. The Supreme Court never said that. So therefore, everything that flows from that false premise is equally false.
Exceptions for abortion. Are your views too much even for many conservatives to support?
You know, the Supreme Court...
Now, let's do this again. I want to make sure we get this right.
The Court of the United States, in a recent case, said that a man who committed rape could not be killed, would not be subject to the death penalty. Yet the child conceived as a result of that rape could be. That, to me, sounds like a country that doesn't have its morals correct. That child did nothing wrong. That child is a...
Oh,
Oh, clap, you little fascists. Clap, you stupid bastards. You dumb... Clap. Oh, we want some more of our rights took away. Hallelujah for you, bro, Fromix. Oh, glory.
The child is an innocent victim. To be victimized twice would be a horrible thing.
Okay, let's examine that. The child is an innocent victim. The child didn't exist at the time of the rape. Don't you have to exist to be a victim of something? Just asking. I mean, this is just, I guess, we're into some highfalutin philosophy here, but I'm just asking. And to be victimized twice, well. And that's what's so frustrating about these right-wing jackasses. They never bother to think for an instant that maybe, for instance, just as a for instance, you know, this is a nation of some 300 million human beings. So the statistical odds are pretty strong that there was a child being conceived even as Bro Fromix Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum was speaking. Given the fact that the number of millionaires to poor people in this country is minuscule, microscopic, the odds are better than good that that child being conceived would be born poor. But Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum, Bro Fromix, lives in a world where making sure that that child gets born is all that matters. He's clear about Social Security. He's clear about Medicare. He hates them. He despises them. So, to extrapolate, he says that to victimize the child the second time would be horrible. And yet, it's exactly what he would do. He would have that child be born, grow up, maybe, certainly without any government help, certainly without WIC, certainly without food stamps, certainly without any form of assistance for housing for the poor. And somehow or another, work and slave and grind away to 65 or 67 or 70. And upon reaching that magical age, 65 being what it is, where Medicare kicks in, would look at that former child, that once upon a time fetus, and say, suffer. Suffer for Jesus. Suffer. Suffer and die. Because that's the kind of man Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum is. In his world, there would be no Medicaid. There would be no well child visits for that fetus once it became a fully functioning member, or at least, you know, breathing with an autonomic nervous system, with a heartbeat. You know how babies are. They've not a hell of a lot they can do besides, you know, okay, well, they got to have help burping, for Christ's sakes. But there'd be no well child visits. There'd be no chip. There'd be no Medicaid. Because Rick Santorum is a godly conservative. And that's the world this evil bastard inhabits. He's only worried about victimized fetuses, not victimized humans. But I digress.
It is an innocent human life It is genetically human from the moment of conception, and it is a human life. And we in America should be big enough to try to surround ourselves and help women in those terrible situations who've been traumatized already, to put them through another trauma of an abortion, I think is too much to ask. And so I would absolutely stand and say that one violence is enough.
Because an abortion procedure is a trauma as great as and equal to the trauma of forcible sexual intercourse and all the violence that attends it. Did I mention it's Friday on the front porch? I don't think I did. Well, it is. With regard to the applause in that weird little clavern, David in Tennessee asking, and how many of those applauding have been parents of a daughter so impregnated and have ever faced that question? In that lily-white upper-middle-class room, approaching mathematical absolute zero. That kind of zero that exists where even the functioning of the universe doesn't. And it's not just here. It's across the pond. If you're keeping up with, for instance, the so-called debate engendered by the outbreak of violence in London and other cities in the UK, you've been privy to some stuff that's not particularly nice. Some pretty hateful talk, like bring out the rubber bullets. Now, you're about to hear audio, and it's not audio from CNN or NBC or CNBC or MSNBC or CBS or ABC or God knows Radio Rwanda Fox. This is audio that comes from RT, Russian television. And there's probably more earnest content in this than in everything in that filthy alphabet soup I just mentioned combined. Listen.
Well, so police have now promised that they will come down hard on the rioters if this happens again after their soft policy seemed to fail so badly to control the troubles over the last few days. Do you think this new hard line will work, though, if it all flares up again?
This is very disturbing, Kevin. If the police are going to introduce water cannon and rubber bullets, well, I'm very regretful to say that guns have been infesting our communities increasingly in the last 2 decades under the watch of the British authorities. So if the police start shooting rubber bullets, and we know what rubber bullets did in Northern Ireland, it kills people. And if they start doing this in the streets of London and England, I'm fearing that the young people will shoot back. So I really would like the British authorities to rethink hard and fast their approach. Their approach needs to be actually addressing the root causes of this, which is a forgotten generation. This is a generation born after 81, after 85, after the big riots that happened previously.
I know, Sir Camp, but what are the police supposed to do when people are seeing they're being burned out of their flats, they're seeing their businesses raided? They want protection from the police. What are the police supposed to do then?
I understand that, but let's go to the root of the problem. Why did this start in the first place? Because the British police...
Oh, wait. Did you hear that? Actual considered inquiry. Let's go to why this happened in the first place. You know, I'm thinking Carol Costello over at CNN is not capable of this kind of depth. I'm sure she would have a handy-dandy Heritage Foundation report to show that, no, it's just because the poor usually are. By the way, the speaker here is a political analyst for RT by the name of Sukant Chandan. And he's making more sense than 90% of the punditocracy put together, if not 99. Let us back up just a hair and hear this analysis.
They want protection from the police. What are the police supposed to do then?
I understand that, but let's go to the root of the problem. Why did this start in the first place? Because the British police executed a black 29-year-old working-class person in Tottenham. The British police essentially lynched him in public. And then subsequent to that, they beat down a 16-year-old black girl who was part of the protest against this with the family. So if we see the actual, the root causes, the police are never there to protect our communities. They're always there to protect either property or the elites. So I don't think the police are the answer. Communities are an answer, and communities need to address the deeper social, cultural, and even spiritual reasons of why our young people are acting in this way. These are our children. We have to take responsibility.
I mean, exactly. I mean, some of them as young as we've witnessed, and I guess that's one of the most horrific parts of it. Some of them just 8, 9, 10 years old, some of these perpetrators. Where do you start, though? And indeed, are you surprised that they're that young?
I'm not surprised at all. This is a generation where self-harm, these children cut themselves up. This is a mass phenomenon. This is a generation that's been called hoodies, chavs, locusts, gangsters. So that's the way they've been treated by the system and by people in the community. So why are we surprised that they behave in the way that we've labeled them for a whole generation?
How do you think the British Prime Minister has dealt with this situation? A lot of people have said that it's his Katrina, his Hurricane Katrina.
Well, it's a social 9/11, we can say. I mean, you know, Cameron and Johnson and Miliband were holidaying in Mediterranean while they're bombing Libya on the South Mediterranean. As Malcolm X said, you can't understand what's happening in Mississippi unless you understand what's happening in Congo. We can't understand what's happening in London unless we understand what's happening in Libya and Afghanistan. Cameron comes back after the first day of rioting from his nice little holiday, and he calls these young people criminal, and they're defying law and order. This is the same person who's directly responsible for the massacring by NATO of 85 civilians that same night, including 35 children. So let's get some perspective here. Who's the real criminal in this situation?
Let's go back to the police, the way they've handled this. They're facing, as you mentioned just now, serious criticism over the shooting of Mark Duggan. This triggered the riots. So those family, of course, as we know, have been very quick to want to distance themselves from it. What impact will this have on the reputation of the British police, the way they've handled this now, especially the Met?
Well, the reputation is frankly in the dirt for black and working class people, because this is nothing new. Smiley Culture, who's a very famous reggae artist, was killed in his own home only a couple of months ago. There was another death in police custody in Birmingham. So actually their reputation is absolutely, you know, just defunct amongst these communities. But I think really, again, like, I think the authorities have to think hard and fast. Now, I'm seeing in my community in Ealing, which riots took place the other night, armored police cars and robocops walking through my community. I mean, if there's a way to enrage and to provocate young people,
okay,
they're doing the right thing.
Devil's advocate here. I'm going to take in everything you're saying.
Sure.
Absolutely, I'm taking what you're saying. But, you know, the police also have a duty to protect the people I mentioned just now. Equally not that affluent people who are having their shops raided, burned out of their flats, having their cars overturned. They want protection from the police. The police have their hands tied as well, rather, because they have to be very careful what they do, don't they?
Well, if we analyse what they did with Tottenham and then subsequently to Brixton, because Tottenham is the most neglected poor black community in London, they let this happen. They don't mind this happening in places like Brixton and Tottenham and other just neglected areas. But when it hits places like Ealing and Oxford Street, that's when it becomes a problem. We just have to understand the nature of policing. The nature of policing has never been there for the protection of our communities.
All right.
How do you challenge that? I don't see anything there to challenge. I should make mention now that one of my very favorite writers at Crooks and Liars is Susie Madrak. I got to meet Susie at Netroots Nation back in June, and, you know, I just ran up to her and hugged her and went, "Oh my God, I'm such a fan." Because she's got an ear and an eye. And she it was who pulled that clip from RT, and it is her column from Crooks and Liars today that contains these words from Russell Brand. Susie noting, "I always thought of British comedian actor Russell Brand as an amusing, mindless twit. But between this and the recent eulogy he penned for Amy Winehouse, I see he's actually a thoughtful writer." And this this quote, this excerpt, comes from a piece he wrote about the riots for The Guardian. Which more and more is just becoming, well, it long has been. But it's just a damned good paper. And its online presence is will take a backseat to none. But Russell Brand wrote the following, and Susie Madrak quoted it. Go and comment on the article. Tell Susie that that Bob mentioned it tonight, because I want her to know how very much I do respect her work. But she put, you know, just, I don't know, I'm tempted to print this and hang it up. And this changes my opinion of Russell Brand, too. Politicians don't represent the interests of people who don't vote. They barely care about the people who do vote. They look after the corporations who get them elected. Cameron only spoke out against News International when it became evident to us, the people, not to him, that the newspapers Murdoch controlled were happy to desecrate the dead in the pursuit of another exploitative, distracting story. To that, those words of Russell Brand, I would add, and we're happy to desecrate the dead in the pursuit of, come on, what are they? They're the for-profit media? They desecrated the dead in the name of profit. The pursuit of the exploitative, distracting story is in the name of profit. Brand continues, why am I surprised that these young people behave destructively, mindlessly, quotes, motivated only by self-interest? How should we describe the actions of the city bankers who brought our economy to its knees in 2010? Altruistic? Mindful? Kind? But then again, they do wear suits, so they deserve to be bailed out. Perhaps that's why not one of them has been imprisoned, and they got away with a lot more than a few effing pairs of trainers. And that's, of course, what separates David Cameron. As the gentleman noted, on the day that he returned to England from holiday, he had been personally responsible for the slaughter of innocents in Libya. Just as is our president. But they wear suits, so that makes them respectable. You know, perhaps if the rioters in London had worn those silly-ass morning coats that the upper-class twits of the year wear in England, and little bowler hats, and done the Ministry of Silly Walk-Walks while looting, they would have gotten a little bit more respect. Brand continues, these young people have no sense of community because they haven't been given one. They have no, and let me add to what Russell Brand said, because that makes it sound like, well, you know, you have to give them one. People will build mindful communities when they have but the opportunity to build one. Not given one, but merely the opportunity. But as was noted, Tottenham has been ignored for a generation or more. It's awfully hard to build community under those circumstances. I know a little bit about this because it's hard to build community in a place where bombs go off daily. Where you hear more about which of your neighbors has just been diagnosed with some god-awful cancer. Or whose baby has been born deformed than you do about any sort of hopeful anything for a meaningful future under the overhanging lip of an earthen dam holding 8 billion gallons of toxic waste that could give way at any moment. I know a little bit about hopelessness. About boys who quit school at 16 years old, because I can make $50,000 a year running a D9 Caterpillar on a mountaintop removal job. Well, son, you're going to pay $50,000 just to do that? Uh-huh. You don't think there might be a little evil involved? Oh, no. Hopeless. I see it among my own children. In a failing public school system that has been failed deliberately. In a region that has been slowly but surely depopulated because we're in the way of the dynamite. I attended a meeting on Wednesday with some friends here, and I found out we thought they'd quit blasting on the mountain up above our homes. No, hell no! They've got 2 more permits. They want to start blasting again. Because they haven't wrung everything out of us there is to wring. And the same thing applies with the austerity program in the United Kingdom. They're trying to wring, you know, the boys in the funny hats and the stupid coats with the silly walks. They're trying to wring everything they can out of the people who have goddamned well little next to nothing to have wrung out of them anymore. And if they step out of line or if they say they object, by God, there's rubber bullets for them, if not the full metal jacketed kind. Brand continues, they have no stake in society because Cameron's mentor, Margaret Thatcher, told us there's no such thing. If we don't want our young people to tear apart our communities, then don't let people in power tear apart the values that hold our communities together. As you have by now surely noticed, I don't know enough about politics to ponder a solution, and my hands are sticky with blood money from representing corporate interests through film, television, and commercials, venerating through my endorsements and celebrity products and a lifestyle that contributes to the alienation of an increasingly dissatisfied underclass. But I know, as we all intuitively know, the solution is all around us, and it isn't political. It is spiritual. Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. In this simple sentiment, we can find hope as we can in the efforts of those cleaning up the debris and ash in Bonhomme's broom-wielding posses. If we want to live in a society where people feel included, we must include them. Where they feel represented, we must represent them. And where they feel love and compassion for their communities, then we, the members of that community, must find love and compassion for them. As we sweep away the mistakes made in the selfish nocturnal darkness, we must ensure that amidst the broken glass and sadness, we don't sweep away the youth lost amongst the shards in the shadows cast by the new dawn. Breathtaking. And it's going to continue because, again, I can only note that, you know, this is one of those this is one of those mouse trap moments. The better the trap, the better the mouse. There are not enough police or potential police in the entire sceptered isle to contend with the problem that these predatory bastards have created. And now cry, Lord, Lord, to have solved. Such realities. Well, you know, they say the 29-year-old man was a drug dealer. Really? Well, they say that you can drive up and down haulers in West Virginia and see legions of young people their teeth rotting in their heads because of meth problems. Before that, it was crack. In the age of my grandfather and great-grandfather, it was just booze. And they talk about an alcohol problem, and a drug problem, and a meth problem, and a crack problem. But they never, ever, ever talk about the real root problem in which so many hopeless people find solace. And that root problem is the hopelessness, itself. And yet our betters have the gall to stand there wringing their little ring-festooned hands before us saying, "Why ever would they do this?" "Hey, mister, why do you rob banks?" "It's where they keep the money." Is it that hard to conceive? You know, and I'll wrap this up and we'll go to the phones in a minute. I've over-filibobstered in a big way. I hope the calls that are still on the line are still there. But it's all about how the universe, how you approach the universe and the universe approaches you. You tell me how to take this. I started off this program telling you a little bit about the joyful little roller coaster that is my existence. The fun of transfer cases no longer transferring, of little acts of sabotage. Am I going to sit here and tell you that I'm not disturbed by the fact that there is a puncture wound inside the gas tank of a vehicle in my yard? Something that doesn't just happen from road damage? Among other things, if that had happened from road damage, whatever caused it would still be there. That's unsettling. Not so much for me. I don't give a damn. But for the ones I love, yeah, it scares me water-boweled. But that's the price you pay for standing up to these thugs. And I'm not even one of the heroes on the front line. I just happen to be unwilling to shut up. I just happen to talk about it. And far more has been done. There have been other incidents here. We've had pets poisoned. Jack rocks thrown in our yard. Our children subjected to verbal abuse that they hear at home from their parents. But I'm not going to shut up. Silence is acquiescence. And if in the course of refusing to be silent, I can help one more person to refuse that silence as well, then it's worth it. But earlier today, coming back, Ferg and I were passed. And there aren't just a hell of... I mean, this ain't L.A. This is not South Beach, okay? This is West Virginia. We were passed by a brand new Ferrari with a vanity West Virginia license plate. On a day when the transmission, the gas tank, yada yada, on our only means of conveyance had gone south, the universe handed us the vision of a brand new Ferrari. And it had, and seeing that car, not that I'm, you know, no, I don't get car and driver and you know, do car porn. Jesus, look at the new Ferrari. That's not porn, that's self-flagellation. But the universe said, hey, Bob, meow, look at that. And Ferg looks at me and goes, Dad, was that a Ferrari? Yeah, son, that was a Ferrari. Wow. It was an old guy, probably about 60 years old, and had Ray-Ban aviator sunglasses on. Had a vanity tag that simply had the letters A-J-U-A on a West Virginia plate. I said, son, it's almost impossible that there's not some coal money in that Ferrari. And there aren't enough Ferraris on the planet to make me willing to get involved and muck around in the blood of the coal industry to have one. And I said, son, you can take that Ferrari one of two ways. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, on the one hand, it would be very easy under the circumstances and given the last 24 hours to look at that and just feel like the universe had gone right in your eye. One of those. Or on the other hand, maybe it's offered up as a means for us to have a discussion about what actually matters in life. I'm sure that guy is very satisfied with his Ferrari. I'm sure he really feels like somebody sitting down in that almost magical piece of Italian craftsmanship. I said, but son, at the end of the day, he gets out of the car, and in the night, he is sooner or later all alone. And then you know what his worth is. It isn't measured by his bank account. It's measured by his character. And speaking of character, one last thing. I was talking to Boss Man Wayne today. Like my Margie, he's going in for some surgery on Tuesday. I know we all wish him well. I know you do. I love him like a brother. And he said, you know what's going on Sunday, right? I said, well, maybe. He said, the hot dog sale? And proceeded to tell me about the West Virginia AFL-CIO statewide hot dog sale on Sunday. 2 to 4, I believe. 10 different locations. Noting the anniversary of 75th or 76th, depending, I'm not sure who's counting which, of Social Security. The West Virginia AFL-CIO is selling hot dogs, and all the proceeds of the hot dog sale will be delivered to the Bureau, to the United States Bureau of the Public Debt in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Those monies, those proceeds, which, you know, could easily be given to a homeless shelter or a battered women's shelter or a program that teaches skills to unskilled young people so that, you know, they've got something. God knows there's plenty of people that need the proceeds of that hot dog sale. But the West Virginia AFL-CIO is delivering the proceeds of that hot dog sale to the United States Bureau of the Public Debt in Parkersburg, West Virginia, so that the rich won't have to pay their fair share and we can keep our Social Security. God, I love that. I don't know if you can shame people without shame. The program began with a clip from Flush Flimball, the oxymoron. And I'd say he's pretty much without shame. but it's been getting huge publicity. And I hope the movement grows. I'd love to see bags upon... They're selling them for a nickel apiece. I'd love to see bags upon bags upon bags upon bags of nickels delivered to the Bureau of the Public Debt in Parkersburg, West Virginia, from all across the United States. People paying with their nickels so that the rich can continue to have lobster at lunch. Well, in fact, I am long overdue to take a break. I apologize for the long filibobster, but having missed the show last night, I felt like I kind of owed you something. And God knows we are anything but done. Oh, there's an abundance out there. A sickening abundance. And there's your calls, which are not sickening, and are actually the reason we do all this. And you guys make it a hell of a lot more fun. So we will take a little break. We'll come right back. Your calls, a couple of lines open, maybe more than a couple, depending on whether folks have had any patience waiting for me to quit filibobstering. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on your nickel, there's that nickel again, 304-658-3333, email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
Somehow or another, we made it to the halfway point of this Friday on the front porch with me doing all the yakking and y'all doing all the listening, and I apologize for that. This is the horn. It's conversation radio, and I've been doing a damn poor job of it, filibuster and all. A quick trip to the mailbag and then to the phones. Enough of this. Patty, otherwise known as Cowgirl, war with women folk. Hey, darling. Sanatorium is at war with us of the fairer sex because we are stronger than him, and he knows he will never be even as strong as us, let alone stronger than us. We scare the MF out of his skanky ass. He and men like him are little tiny boys who will never grow up. He's one of them that like women with big boobs and a little girly part. Because he has a big mouth and a teeny tiny dick. Needle dick the bug fucker type. Pretty much the same reasons he's at war with the gay, very, very insecure. You know that stuff that trails along behind a slug slobber? That, slug slobber, is what that freak is. If there's anything we here can do, please, please let us know. And Patty says, even if you just want to mull it over with Bill, since he's a mechanic and I have him thinking about what you said about all the vehicles, he'd be more than happy to BS with you and see if he can possibly help you. At this point, I'm just happy as frog's fur to know that all of you, the ones I love and care about, are okay. The vehicles can be replaced. You can not. Love and hugs, Patty. Yeah, well, go ahead and give her a... Yeah, okay. Onward. David in Tennessee noting that Dame Helen Mirren, no less, loved working with Russell Brand and considers him a great chum. Signimal. If he's enough of a person to enjoy her support in social situations, I need no other indicator as to his worth. I think a lot of people held the Katy Perry against him, frankly. Ron and Raleigh asking, I wonder, Bob, do you think that any of those in the overclass would think to return some of their ill-gotten lucre to the exchequer? Oh, hell no, because they're not at fault. They're victims. Funny how they, when they do it to us, we're just the part of the free market process, but when some poor folks do it to them, they're victims. William asking, how does this happen? I'm a strong atheist. How can I pray for an American version of the Irish patriot G. Michael Collins? You were mentioning those radio sponsors. I must be getting fat. I keep getting emails for Magic Pro. well, everybody knows that my first name, I mean, it's Bob. But that's a nickname for a real given name, which is sometimes, well, Robin. And I can't tell you how frustrating it was to get a mail addressed to Miss and Ms. Growing up. And you know, the last nail was, I think, my junior year of high school when I was invited to participate in Alabama's Junior Miss. Thanks only to the fact that my mother had a profound sense of propriety. That was the only thing standing between, because, you know, I'll let the beard go, the hair go, you know, we're going to compete. Jude, writing in from Seattle area. With the subject matter of abortion and Santorum, when did the fundamentalists take on this mantra for control of over women? The Dominionists are the ones to manifest from their own book, Suffer the Little Children. With such tunnel vision, lack of compassion, with their desire to take down this country, they truly are living in an illusion brought on by their cult leaders. All they seek is to prepare the direction for suffering. It's no one's business what a woman does or what one wants or who one wants to make a commitment with. They think in terms of the Seven Mountains mandate, control over every single aspect of our lives. And when you hear one of these right-wing freaks going on about, you know, women be submissive to your husbands, cut your hair, shut up in church, or the little tiny innocent fetuses that they don't give a damn what happens to after they're born, because then they become, you know, then they just become part of the free market machine, like Jesus wanted them to be. Just remember, when you hear this stuff, what you're hearing is the full-throated cry of a significant percentage of this country that yearns for theocracy. And if they're louder than you and more determined than you, here's an ugly little hint. They're going to win. It's just a fact. No, Jim, I was not doing drag. My sainted mother kept me from... No, I wasn't going to be drag. Because there... No. It was... I was going to go and compete. I mean, there's no way I can pull off the swimsuit or the evening gown competition. I figured blue jeans and flannel shirt or nothing. Alabama's junior miss. Dear God. So, let's see. By the way, from Kate, real quick. No mistakes in my universe. Bob, for the sake of clarity, you implied that the 20,000 miles was on my vehicle. Well, I guess I did. I didn't know. One way or the other, she says, nope, the Disabled American Vets furnishes 40 vans statewide. Mine is a 2008 little Taurus 5-passenger affair, slick little rig that gets me on down the road. I wasn't too disappointed to read that Agnes had escaped, that there would be no show. I was exhausted. I had an 82-year-old Korean amputee in a wheelchair going over for retina surgery. Can't walk, can't see, and a bit confused. Took some extra energy. Didn't have much enlightening repartee once I got to my motel room. Zoned out on 3 hours of NCIS. Abby always regenerates me. Harmless entertainment is healthy. It's when we mistake it for real life that we run into trouble. You know, like when you're such an Alabama Crimson Tide fan that you go and poison a 300-year-old tree at Toomer's Corners because you hate the Auburn Tigers. Right. Kate says, my next opportunity for a landline will be from the Pine Ridge Res in South Dakota the last week of this month. Remote Access Medical is doing a 3-day clinic, and the director from East Tennessee wants me to work the clinic with him because I have experience from the days when I worked in Knoxville and Kentucky in the RAM clinics. So, if you can keep the mic hot, we'll hook up in the ether. By the way, I lost my signal when you were checking the gas tank. Did you get it patched? No. Plastic tank, not the kind of thing you want to... No. No, it's... Well, Bob, really the only thing you can do is put a new tank on that thing. So you're looking at a new tank, and, well, we'll see what's going on in the transfer case. Okay, enough already to the phones. I hope you hung around. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Bob.
Yes.
The whole thing about Limbaugh complaining about the Democrats possibly getting control of one half of one third of the Wisconsin government. That one half of one third is what the Republicans are claiming they have in the federal government because for some reason they don't claim the Roberts Clown Court as theirs. And they don't seem to think that happens to give them any power. But as for the rollback of the Democratic programs going back 65 years, I would like to criticize Limbaugh from the right on that one. That takes you back to Harry Truman. That leaves FDR's New Deal intact. Now,
well, yeah, I was kind of doing some math on the fly, too, on that. He's not going back far enough, is he?
No, you got to go back 78 years to take you back to Hoover, and you better go back about 111, 112 to take you back past Teddy Roosevelt.
Well, that's very much true.
You know, but
I think his drug-addled mind just can't do. I mean, I'm bad at math on the fly, but I think he's so fried that, you know, just any and you know, you consider the mental acuity also of his audience. Okay, so he says 65 years. Well, 65 years translates to the age at which you can get Social Security, age at which you can get Medicare, and his little knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, the bat-wing flapping freak army of ditto heads goes, oh, yeah, Social Security, Medicare. Got it, Rush.
But what I wanted to really call you about was you had the other night that somebody had said that the national debt was 10.7 when Obama took office. I don't know if that was true when Obama took office, but the national debt after the last Bush 2 budget was $11.9 trillion.
Wow.
It was almost $12 trillion. There's a place called ZFax.com. They've got under one of their things, little thing called 12 trillion, really? And according to them, $12 trillion of the national debt can be laid at the feet of Ronald Reagan, George Bush I, and George Bush II. Because Bill Clinton apparently would have paid off the World War II debt with the way he was coming back on the debt. But the thing is, if you go back to Gerald Ford and you look at the national debt increases that each one of the presidents run up, under Carter he only had 4 years, but he ran up the national debt 40%. Under Bush 1, he had 4 years, he ran it up 50%. Reagan ran it up to 70%. Bush 2 ran it up 205%. You go from Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush 1, Bush 2, Bill Clinton. Every one of those presidents has doubled the national debt over each period if they would have stayed for 8 years. If you have that under Obama, it will go from about 12 to 24 billion. And Obama would be the second best to Clinton because Clinton, under Clinton, it went up 30%. People saying we're going to cut the national debt with Obama's program, they don't know what they're talking about. It's going up, but it depends on how much.
And it depends on how you feel about debt, too.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things is this. For some reason, we are supposed to pay Goldman Sachs and the Saudis and the Chinese for the interest on the national debt that they put money in to loan us, but we're not supposed to pay the Social Security recipients who put money in to receive benefit at the end. I think I better leave you there. I'm on a payphone and somebody needs to use it.
Oh, well, okay. So, I appreciate it.
But, you know, that's something to think about because the national debt's not going down under any of these clowns' programs, even under Clown Ryan out of, Wisconsin. It was going to take, what, 15 years to cut into it?
Right.
Yeah.
To cut into it, not to eliminate it. Yeah, and I understand you got to go. I wish we had more time. I'm sorry I took so long getting to you. My sincere apologies.
Well, I'll try to send you some of this in an email then.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Take care then.
All right. Bye now. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen. So, I don't know if you had a chance to look at that video with, what was his name? Dark as Howe.
I, to be honest, Sandra, I did not, simply because my life has been a little too interesting for the last 36 hours.
Fine. But anyway, this is a, I don't know if he's from Trinidad or where, but he's lived in England for 50 years. He's a reporter for The Voice, which is a black newspaper there in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically, he's a sort of a community leader, right? And he was being interviewed by the BBC, and this person asked him, she said, you're not a stranger to riots yourself, I understand, are you? You've taken part in them yourself. Yeah, keep in mind, this is a man who's at least 75.
Right.
Okay, he responds to her, I have never taken part in a single riot on demonstrations that ended up in conflict. And clearly agitated because he watched it. He said, have some respect for an old West Indian Negro. That's his words. And stop accusing me of being a rioter because you wanted for me to get abusive. You just sound idiotic. Have some respect. And he goes on to say, I'm a grandfather. What are you talking about? But apparently, people just, they got a lot of complaints and they have to apologize,
Oh, wow. They do that over there? They apologize?
It was a horrific interview. I was just like, are you kidding me with this? It was horrible, but they had to apologize. It was just so blatant. I mean, they would never talk to some old white man like that. No, I was appalled. I thought, this is disgusting. It just made me sick. Anyway, at some point you should look at it because it is quite...
I just pulled it up. Should we... it'll probably make all the phone... probably make the phones break up. But, in fact, I'll give it a run here in a little bit. I just don't want to make your call break up.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, maybe some other time. But it was just sort of, it just sort of speaks to the mentality. Because I also read an article talking about, they don't need to compare those riots to the 80s. They had huge riots in England at that time. This person said those riots could be viewed as almost aspirational because, people could see some improvement happening. But he's saying this is worse because everyone sees is downward.
Yeah, this is no. This
very
is
interesting. You know, it's like no, there is no uptick to this.
This is nihilism, isn't it?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just I just thought, damn. You know, so and the response of the Cameron government is truly, you know, they are clueless and really disgusting because all they're going to do is throw repression at this because they're so freaked out at the prospect of tarnishing their Olympics. You know what I mean? So. I see this as is going from bad to worse because their exchequer, whoever, the treasurer type person, he is completely delusional. He seems to think that Osborne is his name, what he's doing is helping it, and everyone is telling this fool that your austerity is making everything worse. And these are all just, all these people in the Cameron government are all, you know, schoolboys from Eden and
yeah, with the
privilege
ties
privilege.
And the yeah,
it's disgusting. Yeah.
Well, so, and you know, I mean, ultimately, because you know, and he's a little Margaret Thatcher toe sucker.
Yeah. I know.
And so consequently, he's going to think Thatcherite thoughts, and their only response to something like this, you know, there's no way that David Cameron has the acuity to engage the level of consideration that took place in that RTV report that I ran.
Oh no, I mean that's why that's why it's like it's scary because I mean you know you can find decent analysis and come up with it yourself, but you know that the powers that be, they're just clueless and they're going to make the situation so much worse for the people. It's just I just cringe thinking about it. And you know, speaking of, I also am a big fan of Susie Madrick. Funny that you mention her, because she don't be messing around.
No.
Okay? I really like her, because she's just like, yeah, whatever, and cut. Because she wrote this little thing here. I won't read the whole article, just the lead-in, because it's funny. She's talking about Paul Krugman. She said, Paul Krugman is still running around with his hair on fire over how we're ignoring unemployment, and the very serious people are still ignore him. I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, she's just straight to the point. Now, of course, I'm sure she's supporting what Krugman is saying, but she's calling it like it is. It's like, dude, ain't nobody listening to you.
Well, and, I mean, he's got to know that. I mean, but...
No, it's just painful. I mean, I don't want to read that either, but, I mean, it's true because the man is practically yelling. You know, he's like the town crier, original.
And yet,
all
by the same
token,
by the same token, and you know how I am, Sandra. Every time I see one of these, you know, one of these howling lies proffered by the right wing or whatever, the first thing I always think of is, gee, now that's a howling lie, and we know it's a howling lie. But how many million people just saw that on TV and took it for truth? And the one that grabbed me the other day was Newt Gingrich being interviewed. I forget on which channel. It really doesn't matter anymore. In which he said, well, the problem with the economy is that Barack Obama is a student of Paul Krugman, and Paul Krugman's ideas just don't work.
No, I mean, it's incredible. And
I mean, did you see that?
No, I didn't, but it's not surprising. It also fits with, you know, S&P said, the reason why, you know, part of the reason why they're doing this downgrade is because the Republicans won't raise taxes. And in every report from NPR to ABC News, no one, none, zero, absolutely mentioned anything about that in that report. And it's just, it's in lockstep, this propaganda. I mean, you know, I believed it before, but this particular case here with the S&P really solidified it for me. I'm like, damn, we are just really at a disadvantage because if every news outlet is going to say, oh, it's because of spending, oh, it's because of spending, oh, it's because of spending, when you can find a 4-8-page S&P report anywhere online and read for your fucking self, you see what I'm saying?
And it doesn't say that.
No.
Well, no, it's the same thing, and I wasn't going to do the story. It's there pretty... Well, you don't have to scroll very far to find the Carol Costello piece on crooks and liars. Malloy just did surgery on it last night. For this woman to uncritically take a report from the Heritage Foundation blaming the poor for the debt so-called problem is the height of I guess for-profit media hubris, Sandra, because it just shows that there is no way that they're going to acknowledge reality.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it's not reality, it's just propaganda. It really is that stark, because, you know, they are just, to the point where if you look at the polls, people are so confused, they don't even know what the hell is going on. You know, they don't want Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid cut. That's like a given, like by 70 to 80%. But they also want the deficit reduced, you see? And that's a function of just horrible propaganda, you know? Because they can't distinguish between, you can't have both of them. You see what I'm saying? But the American people seem to be quite clear that they don't want what's left of the safety net cut. But they don't realize that they're going to do it anyway. This is a thing that people need to realize.
I don't know if you saw John Stewart's piece on Megyn Kelly's return to Fox News. It was called Megyn Kelly Suffers from Postpartum Compassion. And, y'all, it's a beautiful thing. It's worth scrolling again through Crooks and Liars for. But he makes this... He uses Megyn Kelly because she just came back from maternity leave, and in her absence, that awful, awful Mike Gallagher.
Yeah.
While she was gone on maternity leave, he opined that she was on maternity leave and followed it with the words, "What a racket." So on her first day back, she eviscerated Mike Gallagher. Talking about how, and he said, well, that's just unfair. It's unequal. What about, what if a man wanted to take 3 months off to take care of a newborn baby? And she said, well, he can. It's called the Family Medical Leave Act. And anybody who was watching that when it happened, I saw the original clip before John Stewart took it apart. And I'm sitting there thinking, but you work for Fox, honey. You don't believe in government intervention like the Family Medical Leave Act. And the Family Medical Leave Act's a piece of crap anyway, because it's unpaid leave, and it doesn't even apply to organizations with, less than 50 employees.
No, when the bitch was knocked in the face with a rot and still couldn't make the connection. Incredible.
And then, to top it all off, Stewart played clips of her criticizing the Family Medical Leave Act and maternity leave.
Right, no, but it's always not them. It's like when you were playing that Rush Limbaugh, I'm like, my God, do people listening to this pig actually believe this shit that he's saying, trying to portray his cause as the cause of the victim? I mean, it's stunning how he runs that show. We're always under attack, and we have this one little victory, and it's just like, what are you talking about? He has people believing his bullshit, and those very same people are going to be annihilated by the policies that he's celebrating. I just don't understand. I really am quite disturbed.
Well, I think the psychodynamic of it, Sandra, lies in the fact that most of his listeners are not like most Horn listeners, for instance, or anybody who listens to anything online. When you listen this way, you are inclined toward thought. You know, there's a chat room there that people participate in. Links go back and forth. Discussion is ongoing. Whereas most of Limbaugh's listeners and most of Hannity's, as Ed, otherwise known as Kurt, pointed out the other night, are captives inside their automobiles. And so it's like something out of the Manchurian Candidate. You know, they're just rewiring their brains while they dodge traffic. And so it's almost like some sort of subliminal suggestion where your brain's busy doing other things, but at the same time there's enough background to pick up messages like, you hate Social Security, you pulled yourself up by your own bootstraps. And the next thing you know, it's all over us like athlete's foot.
Well, and also, I guess there's an underlying assumption, too, that people don't have the basic idea about how government works at all, zero, because the idea that in Wisconsin, two of those hardcore Republican district got flipped is huge. You know, I don't care that they didn't get the House back. They flipped two Republican areas. And, of course, the dumbasses rolling around listening to Rush, they, you know, they don't really even make that connection. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, we won, we won. It's like, well, no, actually, you didn't, you know, and this is, you know, bodes well for the progressives in Wisconsin. I mean, I think, that's just my opinion. I think that,
Well, and the two that they did win, bear in mind, the two that they did win, Sandra, they won going uphill against, you know, bullshit electronic voting schemes where you can't count ballots.
Right. I'm just saying, you know, but the way, you know, but, you know, the Limbaugh has this sort of no information on his side completely, and he has the control of vast media resources. So anyway, I don't know. I just was sort of like, oh, my God. I'll keep it quick. I'm sure you have other people. But I must commend you on that German article that you tweeted of the Galbraith article.
Yeah, wasn't that a little sit up straighter?
Listen, and the one, I just want to read this one bit that just really got to me. He's, you know, I mean, the thing about that was kind of disturbing. It was full of interesting information, but the sort of despair on the left is just palpable. He said, and the president, too, is a young man, unlike, say, Lyndon B. Johnson or Jimmy Carter. When his term ends, he won't be able to simply to go home. He'll need a big house in a gated suburb with high walls and rich friends and a good income, too, from book deals and lecture fees. He may be thinking about that now. The good news is, it won't save him, for if and when he ventures out for the rest of his life, the eyes of all those who hopes he once raised will follow him. The old, the poor, the jobless, the homeless, their eyes will follow him wherever he goes. I mean, damn! Is he disillusioned or what?
Oh.
I was like stunned reading that last paragraph. I thought, oh my God, dude. Anyway.
Well, and you know, the other, and first of all, credit where credit's due, Benedict sent that along to me.
Oh, okay.
And then I tweeted it. He's on top of all this kind of stuff. But secondarily, it's the fact that this is something that gets, that they used to have that thing, and Republicans were really good at raising it any time it was to their benefit. You know, politics stops at the water's edge. Like, you know, if you go across the river to Mexico, you can't say anything bad about the U.S. Or anywhere else. But the fact of the matter is, because of the state of media in this nation, Sandra, you know, that thing had to be published in Germany. Would the New York Times have touched it? I mean, it's not like this guy's Bob Kincaid sitting down writing a rant. I mean, this is, you know, the son of Galbraith.
Yeah, and he's a chair at University of Texas in Austin. So it's not like he is some sort of slouch. I mean, but it was just sort of the tone, you know. I mean, you know, sort of mixed with despair and just some serious anger up in here. I think there's a lot of people who are completely aghast. I think the Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid on the table really, really sent it home to people, you know, about Obama. I just don't know how he's gonna. I don't know what he's gonna run on, you know.
And I'm sick and tired of what I have inside my own skull, Sandra, because on the one hand, and maybe this is just me being subjected to the same kind of manipulation that we all are. On the one hand, I'm so disgusted with the fact that he seems absolutely committed to opt. I mean, I've come to this place. Wow, I'm almost not making any sense at all now. I've come to this place where I don't think it's a matter of he'd like to do A, but the situation causes him to have to do L. I think he's being the president he always wanted to be. I mean, I think if you I don't know, bug the White House, you'd hear a group of advisors and a president who are, barring the Republican House, very satisfied with where they are. They think they've accomplished a lot. Every now and then that little list will come out that says, you know, the Obama administration has accomplished more in its first 3 years than the Clinton administration, the Carter administration, and the Johnson administration combined, or some such bullshit as that.
I know, but the triangulation in a time of Hoover is a problem. I don't care. Okay? We're not in some sort of hyper-economic time like with Clinton. You know, this is... I don't know. You know, like I said, I mean, the politics have been turned inside out, so any kind of, you know, rational analysis may be just out the window at this point, but this just looks crazy.
Speaking of great moments in shallowness... I mentioned the other night, and I can't remember, is it Catherine Hoover? Her last name is Hoover.
Have you
looked that woman up?
No, I have to, because you mentioned her, and I keep forgetting, but yeah, that's all my
thing. I mean, she's, you know, she's white and blonde and perky and pretty, and she wears clothes that are red, white, and blue, and she has a message for today's youth that the Republican Party is the party of their future. And I first ran across her on Bill Maher, going, who the hell are you? And I mean, she was like Phyllis Schlafly, only young, and not hideous and hateful.
And related, you know, it's like related to the
great granddaughter of Hoover.
And it's like the Taft family. I mean, these people are still around, and they're still horrible, just like their legacy indicated. Oh, listen, just breaking. You know, I didn't even realize this, but. BART, which is a Bay Area Rapid Transit, they cut off cell phone service Thursday evening to prevent a protest. So, coming to a shore near you, you know, don't get too comfortable with this digital shit.
Who cut it off?
The BART system. You know, if you're on the train, I guess they cut off the services, whatever town.
Wow.
Yeah, this is something that people should really check out. It's interesting because smacks of Egypt and Bahrain and, you know,
and Orwell. Don't you imagine that plan is already in place in England now?
Well, yeah, no, I'm just saying, but it's here too, and if that's not a First Amendment issue, I don't really know what is. And I'll leave you, but I must mention this on Back to the Shallow for a minute. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that, but that movie, The Help.
Yeah, I saw that.
Please, please, please. You know what? I can't take it. I can't take it no more. Okay, first you had Shawshank Redemption, the only movie where it was one Negro in a prison. What the fuck? You had the Green Mile, magic Negro spraying folks from a cell. Now you got these maids, you know, and this perky white bitch going back to the day, I wish I was back there. This is what I would have done, hell. It's hideous. You know, it's about maids. We're still on maids. It's 2011. I don't want my niece to see in this shit. You know?
Because
think of it.
No, because I saw the email, Sandra, and I went and you know, usually you're good for a couple of sentences of setup. But I could tell that you were probably vibrating.
I don't even know what I wrote to you. I probably said like I don't know what.
I think the subject line was please. And I think the body of the email was no more of this shit.
Listen, I know, I didn't mean, you know, I try not to be completely.
No, so I click on it because I'm thinking, well, that's a little enigmatic. And I watched it, and all of a sudden I understood the apoplexy.
Because it was. You know, it's
in 1954, three noble negresses changed a southern town forever. And you know, the narrator voice, and oh.
No, but the worst was when this black maid is like, you know, flushing the toilet, and that's her big protest, to pretend that she's shat in some white bitch's bathroom. I'm like, oh, snap.
Oh, yeah, well, no, that goes back to Cicely Tyson spitting in Sandy Duncan's the water or something in Roots, doesn't it?
Oh, well, no. That's Miss Jane Pittman. See, that's all right. I thought that was great. Sandy Duncan, her old ass, she spit in that cup and gave it to her. I was rolling. That's a bit different. This here is like driving Miss Daisy.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. This is just redux. This has a sensational value where that had a reality to it.
Yeah, no, I like, you know, that one was good. And, you know, when I need to get my mind right after being assaulted by these sort of movies, I will quickly put on my prized possession of Imitation of Life. Okay? Have you ever seen that movie?
Yes, I have.
That's my movie. Home Sick is like, no, I'm taking a plane. I'm out of here. It's great. You know, if I want to get right, when I have to look at these sort of, you know, Negro films, I'll go there, or Raisin in the Sun, that's my other one, because Sidney Poitier, when he loses it, but I want to get the fuck out of here, I need that money. I love those movies.
Well, that and, you know, Tracy bringing up that, you know, she's tired, you know, she's tired of the nobility aspect, and she wants a little more of Sidney Poitier in the Heat of the Night.
Right, you know, just something. I don't need to see Will Smith playing some magic Negro on the golf course. You know, I don't need to see none of that. That's scaring me. And there's just so many of them. That's why, you know, I mean, what Denzel Washington, you know, I mean, I like him. He's not like my absolute favorite, but I loved him even more when he told, they wanted him to play the guy in Amistad. And he said, oh, no, I don't feel like being beat today. I was like, thank you. Okay, so he turned down that role because he said he didn't feel like being whipped. It's just like, I don't know.
Well, you know, and you know, there's a certain be advised quality about that. And okay, we're only getting more shallow here, Sandra.
Yeah, that's fine.
You are, I presume, familiar at least passingly with Robot Chicken. It's on Adult Swim on the Cartoon Network.
Oh.
It's Seth Green, and it's all claymation, and most of it, and it's frequently quite disgusting.
Okay.
But Agnes and I saw this one clip one night, and we were just laughing our asses off until a little bit later. I mean, like, I sat, you know, because it comes on at, like, midnight. And a little bit later, I sit up in the bed, and I go, honey, do you realize what he was making fun of? And she goes, no, what are you on about now, Bob? You know, it ain't easy living with me. And I said, wait. And, you know, grab the laptop and, you know, clackety, 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 clackety. Okay, so here's the Robot Chicken thing, and it's all claymation. The scene opens with Pegasus, you know, the winged horse.
Right.
With his hoof in a jaw trap. Okay? He's been immobilized. It's, you know, like a bear trap. And this cute little redheaded girl comes along, and he says, oh, thank heaven, little girl. I'm in this trap. Can you help me? And in an innocent little voice, she says, I'll be just a minute. And she comes back, and she's got a pair of garden shears, and she shears his wings off, and like there's blood spouting. Again, it's claymation. And you fast forward to Pegasus coming to in a stable. And he's been painted pink. And the little girl is a psychopath. And she looks at him and says, what's your name? My name is Pegasus. And all out of nowhere comes this whip. And she starts beating the shit out of this horse, asking him repeatedly, what's your name? Every time she says, what's your name? Sunny Muffin. Until finally, he says, my name is Sunny Muffin. And we're going to be best friends forever. And the funny part was Rip Torn, the with the deep voice, Men in Black. You know, the horse looks over in the next stall, and this is what got me and Agnes laughing so hard. And looks over at this, you know, the griffin, the most horrifying beast of all mythology, right? And he's been painted yellow and purple stripes with sparkles. And he's, and the horse looks and says, who are you? And Rip Torn, doing the voiceover, says, Sparkle Flake, apparently. And I was just devastated until, like I said, I sat up and went, oh my God. And so I'd show Agnes on the laptop the scene of, what is your name? My name is Kunta Kinte. What is your name? My name is Kunta Kinte. Your name, Toby. And I was just kind of, no, really? Really? They parodied that? And so I so understand Denzel going, no, I ain't going to be whipped today.
That's sick. I think I know what you're talking about now, the claymation stuff, yeah.
And, you know, I guess everything's fair game, but, you know, I remember when, you know, I was a kid when Roots premiered. And all the white people in Alabama who sat and watched Roots were really proud of themselves. You know, I understand now. I watched Roots. Only, you know, with a different accent. I mean, we talked about it in Sunday school and everything. But that scene with the whipping of the young African until his spirit was broken enough to accept his new slave name, that was some powerful stuff. But it also, but you know, poor LeVar Burton. He went from Roots to not working for about 10 years because he had done to him what Leonard Nimoy had done to, you know, he was Kunta Kinte Toby.
Right, and then he
has to finally get a job on Star Trek Next Generation where he can't even have eyes.
Right. No, listen, that's the same thing we thought. We thought, damn, they got this fool deformed. I was glad we was on Reading Rainbow. At least he was LeVar Burton.
Yeah, right. I mean, Reading Rainbow was a step up.
And you'll notice
in the sequels to the Star Trek Next Generation movies, he finally gets to have a face. I mean, he finally gets to have eyes. But they're fucked up eyes.
Yeah, they did do old Kunta wrong. That's true. Poor dude. Stop.
And, you know, you just don't want to be that.
No, it just reminds me, you know, because I remember he's doing all the, you know, the big deal when Halle Berry got the Academy Award, right?
Yeah.
Did you see what she got the award for? Good Lord.
No, wait, what?
The movie that she got the award for.
Oh, that one, yeah, where she was getting beat all to shit?
Yeah, it was just like, oh, my God. Anyway, never mind. That's, you know, starting me off on a whole another rant about Hollywood, which I'll spare everyone. Anyway.
No, we'll get to that one. I promise one of these two.
It was just more the help. I'm thinking, no, you need help, okay? The help stop making these movies about the Negroes. Stop it.
Well, David in Tennessee following up, by the way, and you know, this is David listens to NPR and stuff, and he catches things on the fly that maybe you and I would never know. But David just said, NPR did a nice affirming spot on the whole thing on Wednesday. Well, today they felt compelled to air a second piece stressing that not all of America felt good about the movie The Help.
Well, yeah, of course they would have to. Just because Tyler Perry and Oprah say it's okay don't mean that the rest of us niggers get it and want it, okay?
But, you know, the white folks are going... And this is what I hate about that. This is the insidious quality of this kind of thing, Sandra. What I really loathe is that, again, it's the I watched every episode of Roots Factor, therefore I am no longer a racist. They'll get, you know, if people go and see this movie in Jackson, Mississippi, well, see, we're not racist anymore.
Well, no, the whole thing is to sort of show, you know.
You know, when we had the story just last week, or just early this week.
Yeah, about the run over the first black man, you see, yeah.
Yeah. You know, though, I mean, it's the feel-good movie of the year cannot exist side by side with that reality.
Oh no!
And the sad thing is the fiction of the feel-good movie of the year is going to trump the reality.
And the thing about The Help is just some made-up shit in some, you know, white liberal's mind too. That's the other thing about it. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's hideous.
See, I had to go read about it to find out that it wasn't, you know, based on a true story. No, it's just...
It's some made-up shit. It's like Mississippi Burning. You know, the FBI is the heroes? For real?
No. We talking about the same FBI here?
Yeah, you know, it's incredible. The sort of distortion that, you know, one has to endure if you have any affinity with history at all in this country, what you have to put up with. And how they can make a movie now 20 years ago. How about that? Let's leave the 60s, 50s, 40s. For a minute, let's try making a movie about the last 20 years or something. Because I am so sick of that period. Oh, God.
Oh, and you know what? Just from the few conversations I've had, the people who are actually involved in the civil rights struggle aren't real crazy about being represented on the silver screen either. Because they get it wrong.
Well, especially when it's just to affirm the enlightenment of the various white people in the story. It's just like, oh no.
Right,
no,
because this isn't about black empowerment. It's about white. It's apologia for white.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, it's incredible. That narrative is just, it's chronic with Hollywood. But anyway, listen, I guess enough with that. I'll leave you at that. Oh, did you see the football yet?
No.
Dallas?
You know,
they had a game. Dallas and I forgot who they played. Anyway, listen, I'll let you go. So have a good weekend.
All right. Take it easy. See you, Sandra.
Bye-bye.
Bye. No, I had to go read up on it to find out that it wasn't for real, because it is very much offered as for real. And, you know, there's in the trailer for The Help, there's this little Clint Eastwood moment where the less pretty of the two of the maids says, "Well, you got me into this, but I'm going to finish it." And, you know, at that point you expect, you know, the soaring the thrumming. I don't know. She's going to get a bandolier of 50 caliber machine gun bullets and go marching out the and go. No. But it's always worth it. I'm sure the other side would say, well, you know, you're just reading too much into it. And my response is, no, you're not reading anything into it. The whole reason that drama and theater works is because we do bring stuff to the performance. That's why the Greeks invented the word catharsis in the first place, because you bring all the shit in your life with you and sit it right down there on the bench in the amphitheater, and then, you know, when Oedipus walks out on stage with his eyes having just gouged out his own eyes with his wife's cloak brooch, all the rotten crap that you've done comes rushing home to you, and you're thinking, wow, the gods could do this to me, too. I better be careful. So you do have to read some stuff into it, for God's sakes. David in Tennessee, who sent a note a week or so ago about the fact that he was very much raised by the maid in their home. He says, referring back to the email about Mamie feeding me food that made my life better and her process of improving my life to this day, I shall not be seeing The Help. Nor I. You know, there are enough hero stories, if they are legitimately told, to last a lifetime. We don't need any made-up crap. You know, what, did Nora Ephron write this one, too? I'll have what she's having. Jesus. To the phones, back. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston, how are you? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, likewise. It's been a while. I wanted to let you know that I saw The Last Mountain, and I was thoroughly impressed. I thought they did a wonderful job covering both the problems and then, you know, throwing you kind of a lifeline of hope and not just the vision, but the reality of the wind turbines that monastery, I think, in Rhode Island.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, but, you know, that technology is not sufficient to, you know, help. No, someday in the future it might, but no, it's real.
It is real. It is real, and it's popping up all over the place, and it's a real threat to the fossil fuel mafia, for sure. You know, I've been thinking about something. You were playing those Rush Limbaugh clips, and I despise him on so many levels. What a despicable human being, and all the people behind him who direct him. There's not a sentence that comes out of his mouth that's not a contrivance of some big business PR firm.
And that isn't just putrid in its very nature.
Totally putrid, anti-human, anti, of course, environmentalist, anti-feminist, any popular movement. You know, since he serves elite interests, he's going to be going after popular interests, like the environmental movement, the women's movement, the labor movement, right down the line, civil rights movement, gay rights movement. He's attacking it. It's appalling. He's certainly our Joseph Goebbels. and hideous figure. And, you know, it's a sad commentary on the society that, you know, it's not just him. I mean, it's the station managers. We can only imagine the money that's getting handed over to get that stuff played on the airwaves. So he's on like 800 stations around the country for all these years. No issue with job security when you're sitting behind the golden microphone.
Oh, no, and bear in mind, and this is perhaps one of the sickest aspects of his shtick, is that, you know, if you're a little, you know, 50-watt AM out in Donut Junction, you know, it's a hole, then maybe you can have the Limbaugh show just for barter, where you play their commercials and you get to play their show. But if you're in a market of any size, and that includes the fifth smallest radio market in America, to wit, Beckley, West Virginia, then it costs you money. I think it cost the station I was at $5,000 or $10,000 a year to run Rush Limbaugh. Now, and God knows if you're the 50,000-watt blowtorch in Denver, you're paying out some serious coin.
That's interesting. I wonder how all the financials play out with that. But go ahead, if you want to.
Well, no.
I mean, they're paying to play that.
Yes.
You know, because I know, you know what.
Well, I don't. I mean, I don't. Don't take me for gospel on that, Preston. Maybe if you're a 50,000-watt blowtorch, you get it for barter because of the size of your audience.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking.
But they darn sure charged for it in small markets and medium markets.
Yeah. And, you know, and Tom Hartman talked about some of the arrangements, you know, that he was getting, you know, this airspace with, it was an interesting arrangement, a very convenient one, that put him on the air. You know, he had hung around with Roger Ailes for so long that he has the same mannerisms. He's almost like a mini-me of Roger Ailes. Because Roger Ailes was a media guy for a while. He had his own, like, TV talk show.
Preston, you have shocked me.
You know about this?
No. You are the Horn's resident optimist. Did you say Tom Hartman?
Tom Hartman, well, he wasn't defending him. Tom Hartman was talking about how Rush Limbaugh's show came to be and was talking.
Oh, I understand. Okay, I missed a beat there. All right. Because I was about to be really, really scared.
No. He, not in an ally sort of way.
Oh, but no, that Limbaugh has become sort of a little mini-me of Ailes. I understand now. I'm sorry. I was having a little dim moment there. My sincere apologies.
You know, I maybe wasn't making myself clear, but yeah, Roger Ailes, who was with the Nixon administration, groomed Rush Limbaugh. And I think Limbaugh started on this kind of lecture circuit. 60 Minutes did a piece about his, you know, how he kind of was groomed and came up through doing these, you know, Rush the Nation or something like that. He was giving these talks around the country. And anyway, Roger Ailes was there all along, kind of grooming him and connecting with AM.
Well, and there was another guy besides Ailes, and he is since dead, Preston, and a little research into Limbaugh's background will divulge the guy's name. I just can't get to it right now. But he was a gay man, and he was very, very well connected in circles that Limbaugh needed to be connected in. And he taught Limbaugh how to speak, and he taught Limbaugh how to dress, and he taught Limbaugh, you know, which fork to use. I mean, because Limbaugh was just another rube from southeast Missouri.
Yeah, he was a PR guy for the Kansas City Royals for a while.
Well, that was after he got run out of Pittsburgh when he got busted on the pandering charge. Pandering is the charge that you use when a man is soliciting sex from another man. It's okay. Called, I mean, it's on the books, it's pandering. Interesting that he would go on to be the nation's number one political panderer. But, yeah, that's why he got run out of Pittsburgh, and he left the DJ racket for a while And that's what I'm talking about when I say that he went and sold hot dogs for the Kansas City Royals. He was part of the PR team of the Royals in their front office.
Yeah.
And then he landed the gig in Sacramento, going from and went from Sacramento to New York under the tutelage of this person whose name I can't remember, who was gay and is now dead. And at the same time that he was being tutored, would go on the air. You know, we find Limbaugh hateful and revolting, but he was actually far more revolting than he is now. Once upon a time, he was much more shock jock Imus like.
Michael Savage-y.
Yeah, you could say that. When he told the African American caller, "Well, call me back when you get the bone out of your nose."
Yeah, Bob Grant-ish.
Yeah, and let's see, what was another one of his greatest hits? Suggested that the NAACP should offer classes in robbing liquor stores.
Yeah.
You know, just a really classy guy.
It goes on and on. And again, it says something about the managers of these stations that applaud it, support it. And oftentimes the stations are also the stations of the big pro sports stuff, and I have no issue with people's mindless diversions and mindless entertainment, but I think there is a symbiosis with
Preston,
right-wing fanaticism.
You're not off the beaten path at all. For instance, if you were to ask David in Tennessee, he would tell you that you just threw the bullseye smack dab into the center bull, because if you listen to the genre or subgenre, maybe, in any major market called sports talk radio.
Oh, my God, dude. I've heard bits of that.
Sports talk radio is essentially right-wing hate radio with balls and strikes, unless you're listening to somebody like Dan Patrick.
Yeah.
Or I can even tolerate doses of Jim Rome. You know, have a take and don't suck, you know, all of that stuff.
Well, he's got that SmackDown segment where people basically call in and insult each other. And it's very, oftentimes it's very misogynist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the macho posture.
You know, if there's one person who should have, you know, I've often threatened, but I can't get the cooperation necessary. I've often threatened to put together a horn sports show just to see what a liberal sports talk show would sound like. But I don't have the smarts to pull it off all by myself.
You'd have Dave Zirin on.
Well, that's where I was going. The fact of the matter is, ESPN Radio should just hire Dave Zirin and give him 3 hours of his own, because God knows that that crap weasel who forever loves to beat on Chad Johnson, you know, Ocho Cinco. I can't remember his name right now. But Colin Coward, I think. He's just a jackass, and as right-wing as the day is long.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm so hesitant to dump on, you know, sports. And, you know, I mean, we have connections with these things, you know, or...
No, but I mean, if anybody has his eyes wide open about sport, it's me. Because, you know, nobody loves his West Virginia University Mountaineers more than I, and you know, I'm eagerly sweating the beginning of the new season and trying to figure out, and you know, now with all the fun with automobiles, going, well, that ain't gonna happen. Trying to figure out how to get up to the LSU-WVU game because, oh, yeah, just hold me back, SEC and my beloved Mountaineers. Well, it don't get any better. But by the same token, you know, the first or one of the first games that West Virginia will play, Preston, is the Friends of Coal Bowl.
Oh, gosh. Oh, boy.
And the guy who hosts the statewide right-wing blab fest from 10 to noon every day in West Virginia, a guy named Hoppy Kercheval, is also the pregame announcer for all West Virginia Mountaineer football broadcasts. I mean, I've had a couple of occasions where the TV announce was by Brent Musburger, and the radio announce was by these right-wing clowns, and I wound up watching the football game with the sound off. Because it was just, it was unbearable any way you sliced it. So I get, I got my eyes open. But by the same token, let me offer you the converse of that argument. And I would submit to you, Preston, and you are very, very, very media savvy. I would submit to you that sport is another area in which our side has once again, through a combination of financial parsimony and elitism, missed another daggum boat.
Yeah.
Because there are those, David in Tennessee and I are unbearable on football Saturdays. I mean, there have been football Saturdays where we're watching the same game. You know, he's down in Tennessee, I'm up here in West Virginia, and there's 100 emails in the course of four quarters of football. I know we're not the only ones. I know, you know, God knows, Sandra is plugged in. And there's plenty of us. And it is a national metaphor, and it is a means by which we speak to one another.
It's a community. It's a source of community. And in a society where we're often very isolated. And
but the Chablis, you know, drinkers, oh, well, you know, perhaps we could have a sports program that would talk about the upcoming season at the upcoming yachting season.
Right, right.
You know, because those liberals.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I
understand. I lived in Omaha for a while, and my mom worked at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, and so we got Cornhusker tickets. And that was great fun in a lot of ways, definitely. And also, you know, college football, I think, is a little less commercial. And even the commercial stuff, there are aspects of it that I still enjoy. I think it's more, whether it's sports or technology or the agriculture system or whatever, it's more about nuance. You know, it's not about dismissing it at all. It's just looking at things more critically and not being just blind fanatics about it. And again, it goes back to the 50,000-watt stations. You're either on the side of the our team, including the right-wing team, or you're un-American, or, you know, we're going after you, and you're the enemy. And, you know, I must say I was pretty delighted to see Japan win the World Cup.
You know what? I was fine with that. They needed that.
They did. And, you know,
I just wish they could have won in regulation.
Yeah. You know, Mandela talked about how sports is such a powerful tool.
So why is it so hard for our side to get their heads around it?
You know, we're getting closer. I mean, Dave Zirin himself has done so much work, and we're so fortunate here in a place like Denver. We've got David Sirota, who interviews him on like a regular basis, like every month or two.
I got to get off my duff and get him on the program, assuming that he would be willing to come on this little, you know, this little internet jalopy.
I'm sure he'd be delighted. I saw him speak at one of the bookstores here in Denver. You know, it wasn't a huge crowd, but the guy just has such a passion and so much insight. He's going to be on in the public mind in a big way, I believe. Actually, I'm not sure. Well, he has his own documentary from the Media Education Foundation called something like more Than Just a Game or something like that, and he takes a look at how sometimes there are nationalistic agendas intertwined in sports, but he also talks about how sometimes there are progressive moments within sports, whether it's those guys who raised their fists at the Mexican Olympics, or the Dallas Mavericks player who I think was against the Iraq War.
Yeah.
There are some recent pro sports players who came out for gay rights, and it goes on and on.
Well,
like
you know
that.
What Dave did in terms of bringing out the value of the ownership structure of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. Yep.
Just, you know, letting
the
community owned it, and that therefore, and that it works better that way. It's not just that it works as well as it works better, and that consequently the NFL, which is all about greed and profit, had to craft a rule that said there will be no more ownership structures like the Green Bay Packers. And Dave Zirin made the very, very, I thought, cogent argument that such an argument is inherently a violation of the Sherman Act and should be sued over and struck down sooner rather than later. By the way, a note coming in from David in Tennessee for you, Preston.
Okay.
He says, please encourage Preston to dig into the niceness of minor league baseball. David said he might find the backstories cool enough to draw him in. And that's the minor league baseball is so much more of a pleasure than major league. I mean, of course, you know, there in Denver you've got the Rockies, but there's got to be some good minor league ball not too far away. And to take in a minor league game is to take in my estimation, baseball the way it should be.
Okay.
And the
okay.
story, and just, you know, find one of them and follow them in the paper through the course of a season, and you're going to learn all kinds of cool stuff about all kinds of cool people, because that's where it's really happening. Because just as college football is a different game from NFL, and God knows college basketball is a different game from the NBA, because in both instances, when you make it to the bigs, everything changes because there's so much money on the line in terms of individual salaries. For instance, you know, it took generations to get a running quarterback, so to speak. That's code for black guy playing quarterback, because you know these monster linebackers can break one of these little dudes in two with very little effort. But the same thing applies to a certain extent to Major League Baseball. And you see a really, really good brand of ball played. I mean, we're not talking about watching little leaguers. These guys are pros, especially if you see something like AAA, AA. I mean, I had the rusty red pickup truck not been going sideways last night, by the time I realized that I was not going to make it in time for the show, eyes wide open, Charleston, West Virginia, single A ball club, the West Virginia Power. Yes, their mascots are a drop of water, a lightning bolt, and a lump of coal. Really?
Okay. I also grew up in Philly. That's where I was born.
Oh, sure, yeah.
A lot of Phillies games and Eagles games. You know, it's kind of sad that with the privatization, this is another privatization of the public commons, the way the stadiums have been taken over.
Oh, yeah.
We went from having a stadium that honored war veterans, Veterans Stadium, to now it's like the First Bank Stadium or
that
Bank
honors looters.
Exactly, and hardly a peep. We're all supposed to honor our military veterans all the time, but when we revoked that honor from them, whatever. And now that money, you know, with each ticket sold, when it was Veterans Stadium, the city got a piece of that, and it went to social services. Not anymore. Same with the Mile High Stadium. That's gone. Now it's Invesco Field. They're going to change the name to something else now. Some other corporation's taken over, and the money gets siphoned away from the common good, and it's all tucked in the pockets of the CEOs and sent off to some offshore bank account in the Bahamas. And again, part of the looting of the nation. And
God help you if you want to go to a game inside of one of those palaces. I actually considered, when I thought there was going to be the funds to do it with, I wanted more than anything this summer to sort of honor my father, who as a young man would get on the train here, and he would ride to Cincinnati, Ohio, to see his best buddy from the Navy. And they would go to a three-game stand on the weekend in Cincinnati. I mean, this is before night baseball and everything. And they would drink beer together, and those were some of the fondest stories my father had to tell. And with Ferg being 15 years old and those father-son moments quickly fleeting, I thought, you know what? And I actually went and checked. You know, Ferg and I could have gone to Cincinnati and back on Amtrak for $110 total.
Great.
And then a motel room and take in some, but it all went sideways.
Okay.
And it went sideways in part because I went to the Cincinnati Reds website and about had a baby when I saw the ticket prices.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the best ticket prices I've found are up in, PNC Park, in Pittsburgh where, and this was years ago, you could get the cheap seats for $8, you know, out in distant center field.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But that's because they're the Pirates and they're desperate to have people in the stands.
Okay. Yeah. But even the 50,000 watt station, and I think here in Denver it's an exception. I mean, the Limbaugh stuff is awful, and then he's on in the morning with like a little morning dose of demonic corporate propaganda.
Yeah.
And then we've got a local guy named Mike Rosen who's this Machiavellian. It's terrible. And he hates the collective, you know, because he's read Ayn Rand and Milton Friedman. But, you know, when the collective, when it worked for him, it's not so bad. When he had a career with the military, then with the Pentagon.
Yeah, just like Megyn Kelly. With Megyn Kelly, maternity leave was great when it happened to her. And that's what John Stewart pointed out in his clip. He said, you know, it's oppressive, regulatory big government when other people get it. But when people like Megyn Kelly get it, it's just a good idea.
It's like Sandra was saying, it's stunning that these people can kind of dress up, go to work, and do this crap day in and day out. It's like, yeah, I'm a lie to your face. I'm a lie to myself. I'm going to live with no integrity, and I'll have a smile on my face about it.
But you know what? I go back to that wonderful line from Casablanca where Sam looks at Rick as the Nazis are marching into Germany or into Paris and says, well, all this champagne will take some of the sting out of being occupied, won't it, boss? And, you know, there are some.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it does. And, you know, in Megyn Kelly's world and Limbaugh's world.
Sean Hannity, this Chris Stakes house.
Yeah, but eventually it does catch up because, you know, it wasn't because he had a pain in his neck that Limbaugh wound up being a junkie, Preston. It was because he could not stand to deal with his own existential reality.
Yeah, beyond the pain in the neck, it was a sickness in the soul.
Bang. First toaster. Toaster tonight. You got the toaster, Preston. That's exactly it. And David adds in just as a sort of a selling point. He said, tomorrow my son and I will travel to Bowling Green, Kentucky to see the Bowling Green Hot Rods play a team from Sheboygan, Wisconsin. It's single A full season ball. Last time there, the oldest player was 2 weeks short of 22 years old. Nearly 50 players on both rosters, and the oldest isn't yet 22. And it is a beautiful brand of baseball.
Wonderful.
And you know,
wonderful.
you're in the door. You're in the gate for $4 or $5. You know, last night at West Virginia Power Park, it was dollar beer night. It's probably just as well I didn't get to go. But, you know, wow, who could ask for anything more? The chance to inspire a 15-year-old with a little cannon on his left shoulder. I'm trying to make a baseball player out of him, but I've got so much. You know, I got Xboxes and crap like that and the Disney Channel to compete with. It's a job.
I can imagine. I can only imagine. Real quickly, though, back to Limbaugh and what he was seeing that I kind of was seeing in The Last Mountain as I watched it. There is a movement. It gets, you know, it's not going to be found on the corporate media very often, although in moments. But Limbaugh for years, in addition to the eco-wacko comment, he would often talk about how, you know, this environmental movement, it's become a new religion for some people. He'd say that over and over and over and over again. And you know what? In a way, he's kind of right. But it's not a new religion. It's an old religion. And apparently, the Bible mentions trees like 1,000 times. And, you know, Christ was the original tree hugger. And it's being revived by this movement called the Creation Care Movement. A lot of Christians and Muslims and Jews, there's this group called Rabbis for Redwoods. And these churches around the country that are putting solar panels on the roofs. And it goes on and on. One of my Facebook friends, Carolyn Raffensperger, who's a real menace to the recklessness of corporate power, she pretty much real pioneer in what's called the precautionary principle. Like, if you're going to put some new toxic chemical out there in the world, you've got to prove that it's safe instead of us coming to you with 10,000 cases of tumors and whatnot and saying, pull it off now.
Well, exactly, exactly.
Speaking at a church here in Denver in a month or so, and one of many appointments that people like this have in, you know, it's not all Rick Perry right-wing militarism in the name of Christ. There is a huge religious movement that's progressive, and whether or not a particular individual is a believer, we can collaborate.
Oh, absolutely, and I don't mean to sound, you know, when I go after what I call the religion industry, I hope people understand that I'm not talking about decent people in the United Churches of Christ or the Unitarian Church or
We do, but I think progressives are missing an opportunity. You know, we're constantly getting labeled as godless and
I agree, but Preston, let me offer a caveat if I could, please. And I know this is a little bit unfair because I hate it when the right wing does it to Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
But it is wow, I'm going to get in trouble. I would very much like to see that segment of the followers of Christ get a little bit more Christ in the temple with the moneylenders and a little less Sermon on the Mount. Okay? And what I mean by saying that is that I would give anything to see. And I will tell you truly, if I was a believer, I would be this person. Getting up actively in the face of the Rick Perrys and the John Hagees and telling them straight up the way the right wing demands that Muslims behave with the Osama bin Ladens of the world. Getting in their faces and saying, you will not defame the name and the spirit of my Savior.
Yeah.
And have them say, because there's this thing inside Christianity that says, well, you know, we all find our own way to heaven. And that's got to end. Because if it doesn't, whatever is left of the good name of Christianity is going to be ground under the boots of these dominionist fascists as they march on a road of bones to our destruction.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a bit much, but you get my point.
I hear you, and I agree with it completely. And again, I'm happy to say some of them are on it. In fact, back to that 50,000 watt station here in Denver, that Mike Rosen character who precedes Limbaugh, he was so upset with Rabbi Michael Lerner. He's of a liberal and Jewish faith, and he was in D.C. at a protest of people talking about economic justice. And, you know, how you're not a Christian if you're not talking economic justice. And, you know, that's at the core of the faith traditions. And, God, Mike Rosen was just so upset about that. And
well, I mean, and you know, I know that there's no grand overarching structure, for instance, to Judaism like there is with the Southern Baptist Convention or the papacy. But, you know, here's another example. This hate-filled clown named David Yerushalmi. Okay.
The Sharia guy?
He's the Sharia guy. He's the guy who invented the Sharia hysteria.
Yeah, and he's a minority, but they get publicity. They're able to project in such a broad way, and it gives such an odd conception to people. I think most of the time, the Jewish people tend to vote Democrat, like 60s.
Well, get this guy.
They were
just listen
to the civil rights movement.
Yeah, but I guess there's
and then
all...
we've got Dennis Prager, you know?
Hey.
Yeah, another right-wing kind of Judeo-Christian.
But get this guy's language, Preston. This is something that Yerushalmi wrote in 2006. It was dug up by Think Progress after he said, I have never written anything that calls for discrimination against Muslims qua Muslims. Okay? Well, this is the guy on the same website that he said that on back in 2006. I mean, hear these words and just, you know, I mean, you'll be forgiven if you just make really, you know, noises into the telephone, Preston. Here he is in 2006. Islam was born in violence. It will die that way. Any wish to the contrary is sheer Pollyannaism. The same way that post-World War II German youth were taught by their German teachers and political leaders to despise the fascism of their fathers, with strict laws extant still today restricting even speech that casts doubt on the Holocaust, so too must the Muslim youth be taught from the cradle to reject the religion of their forebears.
Yeah, it's so horrible. It's, and Robert Spencer, he's another one. You know, I mean, it's not the Muslims who have the big military-industrial complex. You know, the only weapons they've got is leftovers from the so-called civilized Christian people. Give me a break. Did you hear the, I think Fresh Air, Terry Gross interviewed the New Yorker guy who did the piece on the Sharia, anti-Sharia guy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Robert Spencer, he's another one who's going on and on about how Muslims or this, that, the other thing, and Muhammad was such a violent guy, and, you know, leaving out the context and, of course, leaving out the more obvious violence of the Christian Empire, so-called Christian. And
well, they sure beat a hot path away from Anders Breivik, didn't they?
They sure did, and Breivik mentioned, cited Robert Spencer something like 150 times in his big manifesto.
And was camped out over at, what's-her-name, Pam Geller's website.
And her, too.
And my only, you know, my only question is, if he's not a Christian, then I want to go point by point over the Apostolic Creed and find out where he fails to be a Christian, because he believes everything in that just like every other Christian does.
And that's certainly Christian in quotes, you know.
Right. Gandhi, well, yes, absolutely.
Gandhi would make that distinction. You know, I love Christ, but your Christians are so unChrist-like.
Yeah, I love your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They're so unlike your Christ.
But again, even the Christians here, most of them, for example, the Unitarian Universalists, a lot of them identify with the Christian faith. They've got congregations across the country, and it was a Sean Hannity listener, well-armed, who busted into one of the Universal Unitarian churches in Tennessee and killed, I think, three people because of all their liberal thinking. And I've got a Unitarian church about six blocks from me that I've been going to, and I must say it's been a wonderful...
Isn't it? If I had one here, you could not keep me out of it on Sunday morning, because the beautiful thing about being a Unitarian is you don't got to believe any particular set of hooey.
That's right. And there's also a big emphasis on community involvement and tolerance and democracy. You know, it's not just the reverend who talks, and by the way, our reverend's a wonderful man. But
maybe I need to go out and get myself ordained as a Unitarian.
I think you'd be fabulous. They actually, one of the leaders of the Unitarian Church was on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman recently, because they're doing a big push right now for respecting the human rights of economic immigrants of Hurricane NAFTA and these other so-called free trade agreements.
God love them.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
Any God. I mean, and I think any God does, to the extent that, well, you know.
I agree.
Hey, Preston, I hate to do it, but I got to get out of here.
Definitely.
What a wonderful conversation. I'm so glad you called in. You know, we worry when we don't hear from people.
I'll be in touch again soon. And real quickly, a shout-out in remembrance to a wonderful man named Ray Anderson, the radical industrialist. There again, even in industry, we've got progressive spirits on our side. And if you look up his book, Ray Anderson, he was at TED. He wrote some books. He did some wonderful work in the world, pointing to a sustainable, just future. And he passed away this week from cancer, so want to send a shout out to the universe in memory of him.
Well, thank you, Preston. Have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
You too, Bob. Peace, man.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Horn Resident Optimist, that's Preston calling from Denver. It's time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks for a very kind and generous contribution that makes some of the sweat stop flowing about some of the things that I've got to deal with over the next few days. And thank you for just letting me get to feeling considerably better than I have in the last 36 hours. You help me as much as I help anybody else. Bless your hearts. Thanks to everybody who makes everything go, to those who contribute, bloggers, news ninjas, chat room moderators, writers, advisors, to John Fox, who's busy and been out on the road, and to Ben Birch at White Rose Society. And, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and...